You are listening to the Passion City Church DC podcast. To learn more about Passion City Church DC, including our location and gathering times, visit us online at passioncitychurch.com/DC. Today's talk comes from Pastor Ben Stewart, and it's a continuation of a series entitled Survival Skills.
Well, early in our marriage, Donna and I were at a ministry event where they had brought all their gear in a truck that had a trailer attached. And so I remember at one point we were standing out in the parking lot and one of the guys asked me, hey, can you get in the truck and back this trailer up into this parking spot? And the way he said it was sort of asking like, can you? Like, are you able? I don't, it just kickstarted something in me as a man. They're like, can you back this trailer up? And I was like, yes, what? Of course, right? And meanwhile, in my mind, I was like, what am I talking? I don't have a clue what I'm doing. I have no idea how to do this. And so they throw me the keys and get in the car, and I'm like, this feels like a huge mistake, but I can't back out now. So I remember I start to try to put this trailer in the back, and I don't know if you've ever done that, but I'm jackknifing the trailer like, oh man, mama! I'm like, I can't get it! And the whole time I'm doing this, my wife just very gently next to me is like, would you like me to drive? Would you like me to try? And I'm like, no. No, I don't. I don't want you to try. But as this continued, a crowd began to gather. You know, as people came out to see this thing that was taking place, I realized that I was living out a principle for the sake of the young. And what I was showing them was that the fool claims to be wise, right? But the wise is the person who's humble enough to admit, I have no idea. Someone please help me. And so after a while, I realized, you know what? My wife leads a band that has literally driven a truck, pulling a trailer all around America with their sound gear. She's been the one driving. She knows how to do this. Maybe I should give her the wheel. And so she was like, yeah, go, let me try it. So I put her in the wheel and she just literally just, ding, just drops it immediately on the spot. And I was like, you know, I think that's a skill you're gonna pass along to our kids. You know, I'm gonna teach them how to read a book. That's what I offer to the children. You can teach them that. But I realized wisdom was the humility to say, I don't know, someone please help me, right? Now, why do I bring that up? Because that's where we've been. We've been journeying through the book of Proverbs, and Proverbs is written to give us wisdom, competency in the complexities of life, to show us how to navigate life well. And it's written primarily for the young. The book is presented as it's written to the innocent, the naive, the young, the person right at the front end of their career or right at the front end of their life, and to say, you're about to get behind the wheel to some really powerful forces of sexuality or money or your mouth or your job, and you're gonna have forces in your control that you can guide and do great damage or you can grab and do great good. You're gonna either be constructive or destructive with these forces. You need someone to give you wisdom on how to navigate these situations well. Skill with regards to living, right? And so we're closing out this book now, and this whole book for 30 and a half chapters has been presented primarily as a dad imparting wisdom to the son. He's looking at his boy and said, I'm about to launch you out in the world, and the book's for all kinds of people. It applies to all kinds of walks of life, but it's presented primarily as a dad talking to his young son and saying, look, this is the best I got. This is what I'm giving you, wisdom to help you make good choices. You're about to launch out in the world, and the way you're gonna do this, hard things are gonna come at you, and you're either gonna steer into calamity or steer into opportunity, depending on your ability to navigate complexity well. And so he's looking at his son and saying, I wanna give you competency in the complexities of life, skill in the art of living. He's doing what everyone in here wishes they had a dad that would have done for them. To sit you down and say, before you go out in the world, let me tell you the danger's coming and let me tell you how to navigate them well. All of us wish we had a mentor like that. Or if you had a dad like that, you're grateful. And the older you get, the more grateful you become that he was imparting wisdom to you. But even if you didn't get that, we get it here, that our Father in heaven wants to offer us wisdom. And what's great about this book is it's not just a dad saying, oh, this is the best I got. This is dad saying, this is what God says. That God made the world. God knows how the world works, and therefore he knows how to work well within it. And so this book says, if you understand how God made the world, you can navigate that world well. And that's what this whole book has done. He's been telling his son, hey, understand how God made the world and then work well within it. And one of the metaphors he gives his son at the beginning is wisdom as a woman. He's saying, son, wisdom is like a lady. Lady wisdom, go sit at her feet. Go to her house. Listen as she speaks. Learn from her. Woo her. Get her next to you. You get near here. Son, learn from lady wisdom. And then it's interesting. He starts the book there, but now as we get to the end of the book, this hazy metaphor solidifies into reality of a real woman. And he says, son, marry a woman that is also sat at the feet of lady wisdom. That woo wisdom to learn it. And then as you get older and it becomes time to pair off and get married, marry a woman who has also sat at the feet of wisdom and looks like her. You want to marry wisdom. You want to get together with somebody that wants to pursue life well the same way you do. You want someone that as you go out into the difficulties of life, you can trust will fight well alongside you. That's actually the metaphor. What's fascinating about this poem is it's written in a structure of warrior poems, hero poems. That literally, it says that the woman is an excellent woman. Did you catch that? That word excellent is the word hayil. It means strength or valor. It was used of warriors. That this is a war poem. And what he's trying to tell his son is, look, life's hard. Life is a battle. Life is going to be difficult. And as you charge out into the difficulties of world life together, you want a partner that you know has your back. As you run out into the challenges of this world, you want to make sure that whoever you link up with has your back, is not going to stab you in the back, all right? Let me say that again because I don't see enough people writing that down. As you enter into the difficulties of life, you want to partner up with somebody who has your back, isn't going to stab you in the back. That when life gets hard and it's back to back, us against the world, you want to make sure it's someone that's not going to sink a knife in back there and you're like, what? Like the way they handled money didn't undermine your family. The way they use your words, they're not throwing you under the bus to all your friends. That no one can hurt you like your spouse. Their words can be so damaging. Their decisions can be so painful. You want to marry someone you trust that the way they handle money, the way they handle their sexuality, the way they handle their words brings life to you, doesn't hurt you. He's telling the son, link yourself up with someone who's chasing after wisdom just as hard as you are. That's the text. Do you see that? And what's interesting about this is as he presents this woman to her, there were a lot of poems about women in the ancient Near East. And what's fascinating is much of the poems in the cultures around this culture, their poems about women sound a lot like the songs about women in our culture today. It's fascinating. You read a bunch of these poems from the ancient Near East, they sound a lot like modern pop songs and how they talk about women. You know, about their virtues and their intelligence and the good they're doing through nonprofits in the community, right? Is that what most songs about women are about? No! What are they about? Usually your rear and how good you are at backing it up and how it looks at various angles and different states of undress. That's what, look, as your pastor, I'm committed to being real. Am I not being honest? That's the world we live in. And what's weird is that's the world these guys lived in, all right? Like ancient paleonographers are uncovering ancient texts and it's like, she makes the booty go, you know what I mean? Like that's, it hasn't changed. But the presentation has always been a woman is useful to the degree that she's sexual. That's an old story and it's a popular story now. Now, is the Bible against sex? No, the dad tells his son earlier of the wife of your youth, always be intoxicated with her love. He's saying, son, you and your wife should have a blast having sex. It should be adventurous. It should be great. It should be amazing. I won't go into that. We already talked about it. But he says, yes, you should have an adventurous, fun, sexual playmate, but she should also be your haloop, your best friend. It's the same person that you share your heart with, the depth of it. And it's that partner in life that you raise children together and you handle money together and you advance together, that your gifts together are synergistic, that you accomplish more in the world as a result of your union than you would have by yourself. That's what he's presenting, a more fully presented version of a woman than the culture gives us. He points to a woman who gets stuff done and is a blessing to the community. He presents him a strong woman, a hayil, a heroic woman. He says, that's who you want to marry. That's who you want, right? Now, let me clarify a couple more things before we jump in, because I know some of you grew up around church, and I feel like as soon as people hear Proverbs 31 women, they're like, hold on a second. It's this huge eye roll, like, here we go again. You're going to present this impossible standard. Well, look, the whole book of Proverbs has been setting this very high standard for all people, and particularly for the son, because remember, it's a dad talking to his son. And so it's the same standard. It's all the same principles. They're just distilled down, but there's nothing new in here. It's all the principles that have been championed to men and women all throughout the book is now as distilled as he's telling his son, son, not only do you pursue wisdom, marry someone that's gonna pursue it along with you. That's what's happening here, is it's presenting, be with somebody who's on the same path that you are, right? And yet other people hear this and you go, Ben, you read this and, well, the woman's doing all the stuff. Like, what's the guy supposed to do? You know what I mean? Like, this woman's out there cranking it out, and the dude's just like sitting there. No, no. All the stuff she's doing, the guy's supposed to do too. He's supposed to work. He's supposed to not be a sluggard. He's supposed to help raise the kids. The book is presented as a dad teaching the children, right? So this isn't showing you women's work over and against men's work. This is showing you the principles now lived out as you're pursuing a spouse, right? And so they apply both to men and to women. Do you see that? And yet other people look at this and go, well, the standard's impossible. Well, you're not supposed to be exactly her. I mean, she's running like a textile industry. And some of you are like, I don't know. I don't even sew. I'm not good at fashion. And the soil around here isn't conducive to vineyards. Well, look, you're not supposed to be her exactly. But you're supposed to extract the principles that she embodies and say, I want to live according to those too, right? And I want to marry somebody who's living according to those too, right? You want to be a warrior in this world, an overcomer, and you want to marry someone who will fight well right alongside you. That's what the dad is saying. Do you see it? So I'm going to teach you kind of how it lays of presenting a lot of what a woman's supposed to be like, but all these principles transfer to women and men. Does that make sense? Have I set this up enough? Okay, good. Let's jump in. All right. So the book, basically this section breaks down into kind of three parts. There's a short intro and then actually four parts, a short intro and then three main sections. The intro we've basically covered. It's verses 10 through 12. And you see in verse 10, it says, an excellent wife, who can find? A high yield woman, a heroic woman like this is rare. She's more precious than jewels. You got to search for women like this, man. You got to go find women like this, right? And then verse 11 says, the heart of her husband trusts her. He will have no lack of gain. I love it. That word gain is the word spoil. It's a military word. Man, it's a military poem. Like, man, you want to link up with someone that they're going out into the world together and you're going to overcome obstacles together. That's who you want to marry. And verse 12 is really gets to the heart of what you should be looking for. She does him good and not harm all the days of your life. He says, you want to marry someone that at every point along the continuum of your life, that person's doing good to you. Not just it was red hot in the beginning and then fades, but that at every station of life, you want someone who has a character that keeps doing good to you your whole life through. You want someone that you trust. That's at the end of the day. That no matter what, I know they're doing good to me, not harm. When they're off somewhere else, I don't have to worry about if they're talking bad about me. If they're off on a work trip, I don't have to worry about where they're spending their nights. The way they handle money, I know is in the best interest of our whole family. There's somebody that I trust. The way they use money, words, friendships, I trust them. Son, you want to marry somebody that you get the joy of knowing you are safe in their arms. That's what you want. Now, how do you find someone like that? What are they like? Well, that's what these next sections unpack. And the first section is really verses 13 through 18. It's about her productivity. It's primarily about her productivity. That this woman gets stuff done, right? And you see it in verse 13. She seeks wool and flax and works with the willing hands. She is industrious, right? She's industrious. You see it in the verbs. She seeks and she works. She's not being forced. She's not a woman that you have to beg to get after. You don't have to kick to get her moving. You know that she's got an internal drive to take raw materials and turn them into something better for the sake of her community. That's what she's doing. And for her, it happens to be in textiles. She's gonna take wool and flax and she's gonna sew it together, put it together in a way that later you see she's making all kinds of clothing. She's got a fashion line she's putting out. You see that that's what she's doing. I'm taking raw materials, making them into something better for the sake of the good of community. That's what she does. And that is not a uniquely female task. That's Genesis 1. That God took the chaos of Genesis 1, and what did he do? He formed a world that we could flourish in. And then when he made the man and the woman, what did he say? He told them, cultivate. He says, take the raw materials I gave you, and you manipulate it so that it will be more fruitful. You work with the raw materials to create fruit that will benefit society. That's what he told Adam to do. That's what he told Eve to do. That's what human beings are meant to do. As I give you raw materials, exert your energy on it to make it something better for the sake of us, right? That's what Jesus said. Pragmatiza, Make a profit, is what he told his people. I'm gonna give you a talent and I don't want you to bury it. I want you to invest it to make more for the sake of us. It's a Christian principle for everybody. We are industrious people. I remember I had a professor in seminary that he said to us, if I dropped you on a desert island, if I just dropped you off alone on a desert island and then we came back and picked you up in a year, what would we see? What would happen to that island? What would be the result of just raw materials in your industry? Would you be Robinson Crusoe, building a big tree house with a complex pulley system over next to the library, which is just off the lanai, you know? Or would you just be sitting in the dirt, crying, talking to a volleyball, be like, nobody likes me, like, what's gonna happen to you? If I just give you raw materials, be they many or few, are you someone that can make the world better as a result of your presence in it? That's what you wanna look for in someone you're gonna link your life up with. Watch that person. Is that guy's group of friends better as a result of his presence or worse? Is the environment she in improving over time or not? What's her roommate situation like? Is the world better because of their presence in it? Their work world, church world, living world, is the world better? The whole world tends towards chaos. You wanna marry someone who's a creator, who's making beauty out of the dirt. That's who you wanna marry. And look, she's not just hard at work. She's not just grinding it out. You see in verse 14, she's not just industrious, she's also creative. She's creative. She is like the ship of the merchants. She brings her food from afar. Back then, there wasn't a lot of extensive travel, and so you tend to live in the same place. You lived in the same place, you ate the same food, you saw the same people who wore the same clothes, always. So if a ship came in from a far off land, that's exciting because novelty is fun. And so a ship would come in, you'd be like, ooh, what kind of fabric is this? Is that velvet? What is this, a papaya, you say? Fantastic. So you bring in something that just brings some spice to life. It's exciting. It's not boring. It kind of brings energy. And that's what it's saying this woman does. She's creative to keep things interesting. Now, this could talk about the way she shops or prepares meals, maybe, but it says she brings the food from afar. She might be calling in Uber Eats. You don't know. All it's saying is, as she provides for her people, she cares about what she's bringing, and it's not just the basic necessities. We're like this. When you go to restaurants, you don't just go to the ones that they're like, I don't know, it's edible, keep you alive. You want one where you're like, can you fix it up a little bit? I mean, can you at least make it look interesting, the ambiance here? Like, we like when people make the dining experience creative because we value creativity. And let me just say something about this church. We value creativity. We value that. We want that here. We love that. We want you to, we want to recruit and see people come in that are great photographers, that are great videographers, that are great at environmental design, because we know that God speaks to our hearts through creativity, that he put those gifts in you for the benefit of us, that as you do that, and you take amazing photos of this, we can show our friends and say, this is what you'd be coming to if you came here, and it would be great. Or we can walk in this room and say, man, all the little details were thought of. It's like they knew I was coming. It's like we did, and we wanted to create a space for you. That creativity is often the way to our hearts, right? And so this woman isn't just boring. She's not settling for the minimum. She's creative. You want that in a church. You want that in a society. You want that in a culture. You want it in your friendships. You want it in you. Industrious and creative. And not just for her. It says in verse 15, and she rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and portions for her maidens. I think the translation there is kind of a bummer because it says provides food. The literal word they use is prey. That she's up in the middle of the night hunting her prey. I just love that because she's not just a merchant ship. She's a lioness, right? This woman's dangerous. She got a little crazy back there, right? But what do you know? She's not just waiting around. She's not life's victim. She's out there getting it, man. She is getting her prey before the sun comes up, right? But notice, it's not the popular presentation to women of, you just go get yours, honey. You go do what you want to do. You live your life, your dreams. You do it your way. You build up you. It's all about you. And just selfishness is not very encouraging or inspirational to any of us. What happens? That she goes and she works hard and she gets hers for the sake of her household. And the portion for her maidens. The household's probably her family. The maidens are the young women that she probably hired to work at her textile company that she's got rolling. Or it can just be the young women around that come to her for ministry and leadership, right? That was common that a household would have women, young women around. And this lady is sacrificial. That's the next word. She's willing to inconvenience herself. I'll get up while it's still night so I can bring something good to you, to people that I can invest in to make them better. She's industrious, creative, but it doesn't just terminate on her. It is for the benefit of those around her. She is sacrificial so others might rise. Andy Stanley said it this way, the quality of your life is measured by the amount of it you give away. And we all know that. That's what makes this woman a heroic person. And she's not just going for hers. Think about every heroic movie you watch. A hero is someone who's willing to sacrifice their life for the sake of other people. That's what makes them a hero, that they take their power, their energy, their resources, and they expend it. They sacrifice themselves so that the community benefits. That's a hero, right? So my mom, single mom, very challenging, raising three kids on her own. She had to get work, and so she went to work, and she was a school teacher. And she had a list of jobs out in front of her as a school teacher. She picked a job where she would teach parenting to pregnant high school girls. Most pregnant high school girls were dropping out of school, right? Because they can't do both. And so my mom taught parenting to these pregnant high school girls, these girls in a crisis situation. And for many of them, they were dropping out of school because they're like, I got to take care of the kid and can't balance this. So my mom just started writing for grants, started filling out applications for grants. Wasn't part of the job, but started writing to these different organizations to get money in so she could look at these girls and say, I will cover your childcare if you stay in school and get an education. And then not only that, she went out and recruited nurses, and so she was like, I will pay for your childcare and for medical benefits for your kids if you stay in school and get an education, and then I will get you into college. And so she had a group of women all journeying with her that were raising that kid, taking care of that kid, getting an education and getting through college. My mom was not just managing as a single mom to raise three kids. She was changing the course of history for families all through our community. And at the end of it, when she retired, she handed off that work to a girl that had started in her ministry as a scared high school girl, come all the way through, got an education, got her master's and came back and was able to take over the baton of the work from my mom when she had retired, of continuing to make a difference in the community. That's a high yield. That's a strong woman. That's somebody who says, I'm going to step forward into the world and not just be a victim, but be a victor. Not be someone who's overcome, but an overcomer, even when life deals me hard things. I'm a lioness. I'm going to get up early in the morning and I'm going to fight, not just for my benefit, for the sake of others, right? Now, there's an abusive version of this, of let's stamp out women and their dreams for the sake of the benefit of others, but that's not it. This is a woman who's working with willing hands. The Bible's not presenting a woman that's being stepped on. It's presenting a woman who's using her gifts to build up her community. This is a hero, right? You see it? Now, it doesn't really clarify in the text. Is this someone that's a stay-at-home mom and does this just for her kids? Or is this someone that's out in the work world and trying to help the community in that? Back in the ancient world, those weren't as separated as they are in the world now. Like, typically, your business was run out of your home, and this woman's doing both. And so this text doesn't really resolve the conflict I know a lot of women feel of, do I stay home and raise my kids, which is an honorable and valuable and an incredible thing to do, or do I step out in the work world and exert my energy, industry, sacrificing for the sake of the community as how I do that? This text doesn't resolve that for you. It's an important question, but it's not all in here. This woman had a bit of a different situation, so I won't go further into that, but what you see in this woman is these principles apply whichever direction you tend to lean. You see it? It's interesting. In verses 16 through 18, it continues to talk about her provision, but it escalates it. And there's a repetition of words. There's a repetition of hands and then hands, merchant and merchandise, night and night. There's a rhythm to the poetry, but there's an escalation that this woman isn't just sacrificial and industrious. In verse 16, it says she considers a field and buys it. With the fruit of her hands, she plants a vineyard. This woman is prudent, and she is shrewd. You see that? The fruit of her hands, what is that? It's the profit from her textile industry. That you see that she, when she makes this profit off her textile industry, she just doesn't spend it on whatever she wants. She starts to invest it, and she gets into the vine growing business. She's expanding the operation, right? But as she's doing that, she's a learner. She's considering the field. Did you see the verb before she buys it? That she's crunching the numbers, examining the angles before she boldly executes a plan. This is a woman who's trying to figure out how to keep advancing. There's a prudence to her. There's a shrewdness to her. She keeps learning. How do I anticipate and how do I move forward, right? It's interesting. This is one of the things that attracted me to Donna. That my wife, Donna, was always entering into the world as a learner, as an understanding things. How does that operate? That when we were looking to buy a home, she wasn't just looking for a good home. She basically became a real estate agent of just figuring out how the whole thing works in order to get our family into a place where we could survive as a family and grow as we built a family in different homes. Did you go, man, I love this about her, that whatever the different world is, she comes in as a learner. Let me consider. Let me figure it out. Let me be shrewd. Let me understand how it works so I can leverage it for my benefit and the benefit of my family. This woman isn't just a hard worker. She's sharp. You see that? She's prudent. She's making good decisions. And she plants a vineyard. And I love it in verse 17, it says she dresses herself. Now some of you go, is that really an admirable quality? Like I thought that was kind of a basic human, just we all gotta get dressed, lady. No, it says she dresses herself with strength and makes her arm strong. This is another tragedy of the translation. Dresses herself is literally the word girds up her loins, which sounds a little inappropriate. So let me explain what that means. It was actually a statement all through your Bible. Gird up your loins is what men would say to other men when it was time to go to war. Because what would happen is you'd wear long robes. They wore robes back then. If you ever tried to run in a robe, it's tricky. Can't really do it. So what would happen is when it's time to go to war, you would grab the bottom of your robe and hike it up in your belt so your legs were free so you could run. And so you knew it's time for action. When someone says, gird up your loins, man, I gotta loosen up because I'm about to run, right? I'm coming after it. And what it's saying about this woman is the world's a dangerous place, but she girds up her loins with strength and she makes her arms strong. That means they aren't strong to begin with. It means that she keeps working to make herself strong. It means that this woman has grit, has perseverance. That's who you wanna marry. In both a man and a woman, someone who makes themselves strong, that when life knocks you down, you get back up. That life is hard and I don't know everything, but I will never stop. When the difficulties of life come, I will gird up my loins and fight, and I will keep fighting until I become strong enough to overcome. That's the kind of person you want to marry, both male and female. Someone with grit, with perseverance. Frankly, this is why I like the new Star Wars movies. It's controversial. Not all of it's great. But I love that they have a woman at the center who exemplifies this. She's a Hyeel, a heroic woman. And I just, as a dad of little girls now, I'm just so glad in the world of entertainment, I can point to them a hero, a female hero that's wearing pants. And that her whole thing is not trying to rise up as a woman by stepping on men or something like that. It's not become bitterness, but what? She's overcoming, she's rising because she's dealt a hard hand, but she never stops. She keeps growing, she keeps learning, and the community around her is rising. Why? Because she has grit, she has perseverance. You want somebody like that. One of Donna and I's dear friends are Jay and Catherine Wolfe. And just inspirational people. Catherine Wolfe was out in California with a budding acting career, and then very suddenly, as a young woman, had a stroke. Severely limited her physically, and even took away some of her mobility of her face, and so many medical problems came from that. And most people, to see your dream dashed like that, your heart would quit too. What Catherine did is she leveraged her difficulties and created a ministry to others who suffer with different disabilities. And you see, she wasn't crushed by that. She used her pain to open up a whole new door of ministry that has literally changed the lives of untold thousands of people, that she took calamity and made it into an opportunity because she refused to quit. When life knocks me down, I will get back up and I will leverage calamity for opportunity. That's the kind of person you want to marry, because life will knock us down. And all of us aren't strong enough to handle it, but you want someone that will stand up, dust themselves off, gird their loins, make their arms strong, and move forward, and make the world a better place as a result of their presence in it. That's who you want to marry. She's productive. She gets things done. She has resolve. And I love it in verse 18. Because she has that, she has peace. That's verse 18. She perceives that her merchandise is profitable. Her lamp does not go out at night. I love that. She has worked so hard in the last seven verses that when she gets to verse 18, she looks around her merchandise and she's like, you know what? This is freaking awesome. She's like, this is great. She gets the euphoria of knowing hard work pays off. That a woman of valor knows when you put in good work, you get good outcomes. She understands what wisdom's been teaching us. Good input, good outcomes. Most of the time, that's how life works. That's how it's supposed to work. That she feels that. That she gets the peace of knowing it's a job well done. All of us love this when we watch sporting events. This is when we cheer the loudest during the Olympics. When you see Simone Biles. And you know that dear girl has probably never tasted a cookie in her life, like ever. Like doesn't even know what a snow cone looks like. She's like, a what? Y'all keep saying this word. Like it's been kept from her. She's missed so much. It's all just been flipping and push-ups and she was one. Like, I can't even talk. She's doing splits and just working so hard. And then you see her at the Olympics flipping around on that deal and people are taking off little minor points and you're like, really, you do that? And you realize as she gets to the end and she lands on her feet, you're like, don't take a step forward, girl. When she sticks that landing, and then goes, and you see on their face that euphoria take over. What do? You rise up and call her blessed. You're like, You go, girl. You did it. You did it. And you see that look of joy on her face and you're enjoying it with her. You're like, you earned it. You earned every bit of that smile. Smile, girl. Enjoy it. No, don't play the music. No, don't rush her off. Let her take another victory lap. You keep running, girl. You earned it. You did it. Play the anthem again. You just keep celebrating because you know that euphoria, that's the benefit of a job well done. And that's what it's saying. You want somebody that knows there's hard work and then gets to pull back and enjoy it and have peace. That it's not all work all the time. She gets to pull up and enjoy the world she made. You deserve the benefits and you enjoy it. And then it says, and her lamp does not go out at night. And I know some people, you read that and you're like, dude, her lamp doesn't go out at night? Like, when does she sleep? Like, you already told me she wakes up before the light and now she got to stay up after the light. You're like, her husband's probably getting 8 hours of sleep, you know? And, you know, studies show, Ben, that 8 hours are more conducive for our workflow in the long run. Look, we tend to read that and say, oh man, so she stays up long after the night goes out. Interesting thing is, if you read different literature around this time in this culture, staying up late at night past the sun isn't necessarily a virtue. What's fascinating though is back then they didn't have electricity. You don't flip on a light. How'd you keep the lights on at night? You had to buy oil. You bought oil and put it into your lamp and then you could light these little palm lamps. That's how you did it. And it's interesting, there's sayings back then, when you're wanting to talk about somebody's poor, you say, yeah, they sleep in the dark. Yeah, they sleep at night. And what they meant is when the sun goes out, they're done because they don't have the money to buy oil. So what this is saying is not that she stays up way past night. What it's saying is her hard work has paid off. And so now in the darkest of days, they got oil to spare. It's talking about here, not her working harder into the night, it's her enjoying the fruit of her labor. And her family's got oil. When the darkness comes, they're still okay because there's a light burning. Do you see that? Because of what she's done. She is industrious. She's productive, but I love it in verse 19, it talks about her provision. See, here's the interesting thing. We've been beating this horse to death and you're like, a woman that's productive, industrious, gets stuff done. Yeah, that's a real struggle in DC. Can we get some women that work hard around here? Anybody? Like, I just don't feel like this is a thing we're really struggling with. You know what I mean? Like most of you ladies, you're kind of like this, right? But the interesting thing is in this city, when I run into people like this, they're productive, they work hard, but when I ask the question, unto what end, that's where we struggle. I'm working so hard, I got this degree, I got this job, but what's it all for? What's the point? And we need that. And what's interesting about this woman is she's productive, but what's the goal? The transition happens in verse 19 and 20. It says in verse 19, she puts her hand to the distaff, her hand holds the spindle. That are the different tools she needed to work, that she's industrious. But then look in verse 20, but she opens her hand to the poor and reaches out her hand to the needy. That play on words is on purpose. She grips the tools she needs for industry, but she opens her hand to the needy. She's industrious and generous. Oh, for a church like that. We tend to fall on one way or the other. That we're industrious, we work hard, and it's all for me, I got mine, and we forget about the people who are struggling in the world. Or if you look statistically around the country, the states that are the most generous are usually the ones with the people with the lowest income. That it's the poor know the sufferings of the poor. What you see here is a woman that's brought both together. I will be industrious enough to have a successful business, but I will never forget those who have devastating circumstances and struggle. I know how to grip and release, industrious and generous. That's the kind of church we wanna be. That we work hard here to make this place great for a place for anybody and a place for everybody. That's what we're supposed to be in the world. People who work hard for the sake of others so that the community might flourish. Right? One of the most inspirational women I know is like this, Georgianne Reitmeier. I remember when I met Georgianne, she became like a second mom to me. First in ministry that I would live at their house and just watch the way she lived life. For her, her children were grown, older than me, out of the house, but she saw that there were so many low-income families, people that were struggling, that she joined the school board in her community. Her kids are already out of school, but she joined it because she was like, most of these kids need free and reduced lunches and I'm gonna get here to make sure that our school district is serving those who are struggling among us. I will not sit by while my neighborhood struggles. She got involved, right? And I love that we were talking once about someone who opened like a big pornography shop right at the end of the neighborhood where these kids would walk to school. And she was telling me about that. I didn't see it. She was like, yeah, so they opened this big kind of pornography spot right by where kids walk to school. So we got to shut down. And I was like, what do you mean we got to shut down? She's like, we jammed their phones. And I'm like, we what? Because she said it so nonchalantly. Yeah, we jammed their phones. And I'm like, okay, who's we? And what does jamming mean? Like, I don't even know what you're saying right now. And she's like, I got a group of women together and we just called them nonstop, incessantly, right? Until they moved. And she was like, but here's the thing though, they didn't call mean, like shame. Like she got to know the guy, like they brought him food and we're like, hey, we want you to flourish in life. We love you as a human being. We just want you to stop selling this filth and get it out of our neighborhood, but we value you. And she just was like, it was so, he was like, okay. You know, and just sold the building and moved. And it was so great. I'm like, you just jammed the phones. She's like, she just said it so nonchalantly. Yeah, we just jammed them. And I'm like, who thinks like that? High yields. I see the needs of my community, I'm gonna meet it. I'm gonna make sure that my life sees other people flourish. I'm productive, but it's so I can provide. A producer to be a provider. Productive for the sake of provision. And the world benefits because she exists. And I love that. You see it in verse 21. She's not afraid of snow. Which again, you're like, okay, that doesn't sound real heroic. Neither am I. But the point is, she's not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household is clothed in scarlet. What does that mean? Is that she's not just sacrificial, she's thoughtful. She anticipates their needs and meets them. Winter's not here, but she knows it'll come and people will be cold. She's thinking ahead. She's not a sluggard, right? She's thinking ahead of what are the needs of my people and how do I make sure when their need hits, I'm already there with a solution. The women on our staff are that way. It's fascinating. Taylor Sink, who runs our Passion Kids in Bloom. Most churches, when you plant in a city, you know there's not a lot of little kids in a city, so we don't necessarily have a thriving kids ministry to start. That's how a lot of ones start. They go, hey, we got to make decisions. Let's not have a big kids ministry. It would be natural for us to start that way of just going, I don't know. So if someone comes with a kid, like stick them in the DJ booth, throw them some Cheetos, I don't know. But we decided, no, there's going to be families come and have kids come. So before there's a single family here, or a single kid here, we're going to hire somebody who's amazing at their job and she's going to build an incredible children's ministry for our church that before there's even any kids. So as the first couple of kids come, they're like, what on earth? This is crazy. And you're like, I know, all this for me? No, all this for you and all the people who are gonna come because we're gonna see a wake of kids come exactly because their needs are met before they even knew to ask us for them, right? That's what we're gonna do. And that's what we've done. If you've not been over there, it is amazing what they're doing over there with kids. And we did it anticipating that families will come, will have needs, and we'll be right there to help them meet them. Right? That's what Elizabeth's done. Elizabeth, who's on stage here, runs all of our door holders. So many people have asked us, how have you been able to grow so fast as a church? It's because months before we launched Sundays, we were doing community groups to get to know each other. And while we were doing community groups, Elizabeth was working hard to figure out what kind of teams would we need of different people to serve. Everyone's been given a gift by God we need to use for service, so let me put them in teams that can maximize their gifts, so let's get teams, recruit them. So by the time we launched the church, we already had 100 door holders on different teams that were ready to serve. So you watched in, the army had already been mobilized to meet people in the name of Jesus before we had seen a single one of you. And you go, that was because of her industry. That's what women do. That's what men do. That's what heroes do. That man, I'm going to use my gifts with foresight to meet the needs of the community. We want to do that in this city. We want to see where the fabric of society is breaking and rush in to reweave it before people even know we're coming, right? Passion City Church sneaking up on you, right? That we want to come at you and make sure that when people are suffering, we're going to clothe them in scarlet. And you see in verse 22, she makes bed coverings for herself. Hey, everybody else can't have stuff and she not have stuff, right? So she's got fine linen and purple. She's not just a total martyr, all right? She got to get some purple in the mix and there's nothing wrong with that. And she's extravagant. That's the point of it, right? That she's not doing shoddy work. The scarlet, purple were high value because they were hard to come by. You had to get special shells from Phoenicia and you could only get certain different fabrics that would hold that kind of dye that when this woman puts her hand to something, she's going to do it right. She's gonna work hard to make sure it's done well, right? We wanna be like that as a church. And when you come in, so many people say, man, it seems like y'all really care about the details. We do care about the details because we care about you. And people come in and be like, man, it was like you made a place for me. Yeah, you know why? Because we made a place for you. We knew you were coming and we knew that our care for the details showed care for you. So we're gonna do that. And she makes sure, hey, the whole community is benefiting from this lady. Verse 23, her husband's known at the gates. Because she's dignified, her husband gets respect. She's not just she's a thermostat, not a thermometer, is what we say. She's a culture changer. And when she enters, she's not just a thermometer. A thermometer adjusts to the temperature of the room. Thermostat changes it. And this woman, she comes in the community and like, I'm not just gonna adjust to the community. Well, everyone around here gossips, so I just thought I would do it too. Yeah, he does suck. Like, she doesn't do that. The heroic woman says, no, I don't care what these people talk like. I'm going to say someone who speaks life. Hey, everyone at my work might be cutting corners. That's not how I roll. That's not how heroes do it, right? That's the kind of person you want. That she says, no, I'm going to change the temperature. Well, everyone in D.C. is mean. Everyone just cares about themselves. So I had to be mean. I had to cut them off. I had to push that guy. No. We're going to be a church to change this culture, right? Thermostat, not a thermometer. We change things. That's the kind of woman she is. And the community feels it. By verse 24, she's selling linen as a garment. Even the merchants wearing sashes by the end of it. She's hooking merchants up. This lady's getting out there. Strength and dignity are her clothing. She laughs at the time to come. She ain't got to worry about anything. She opens her mouth with wisdom. The teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She looks well to the ways of her household, doesn't eat the bread of idleness. Everyone raises because she's there. She is productive to provide, and then she's praiseworthy. That's the last section. And you see she gets praise in verse 28. Her children rise up and call her blessed. They better. She rose up before the sun did, so you better rise up and call her blessed, kids. Her husband also praises her. Many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceitful, beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the fruit of her hands and let her works praise her in the gates. C.S. Lewis said, if we do not admire what is praiseworthy, we shall be stupid, insensible, and great losers. I love that quote. You need to get in the habit of praising what is praiseworthy or else you will become a loser. So let me talk to the men in the room. This woman is industrious and works hard, and what happens at the end? The man acknowledges it and celebrates her, right? He celebrates her, right? And he should. As a man in the culture, if the primary way you intersect with women is by looking at their bodies online, through images, in movies, all that kind of stuff, if it's just the using of women sexually, that needs to die, that needs to go away. God has made a fully orbed person, and you need to get around some healthy environments and meet healthy women who are doing amazing things, and you need to celebrate and encourage people, not to try to get something back from them, but just because it's worthy of praise what they're doing. We need to be a culture that's good at building each other up, good at speaking praise. I like it as a church when we clap for Jessica while she's speaking for us. She took a risk up here to tell us her story, and as we cheer her on, that's our way of loving her for loving us, that we celebrate each other, we build each other up. It's right to praise people when they do a job well done. Do you see that? And he doesn't hold it back. So men, we need to work on the muscle of praising the women around us. This guy is good. I don't know if you know this about the poem, but the way the poem's structured, every single line starts with a different letter of the Hebrew alphabet. He literally praises her from A to Z. And not only does he praise her from A to Z, there's all different kinds of rhymes going in it, that he picks keywords in the first three words, that verses that match the keywords in the next verses. And then in the next section, he doesn't do parallelisms like that. He switches to chiasms where they kind of parallel all the way to the middle. And then he picks the three words that he used at the top about an excellent wife to her husband. And at the end, he talks about the husband of a wife who's excellent. He kind of marries the, and you go, this poem is working at multiple levels at the same time. This is absolutely incredible. And people are like, Proverbs 31 is so intimidating to women, it's so amazing. It's intimidating to dudes. Like, this guy's working poetry at multiple levels. He's got bars for days. And I'm like, your hair's pretty. Like, you know, everybody's got room to grow in Proverbs 31. But guys, we need to do it. We need to get better at praising and encouraging each other, and start by doing it with people that you're not trying to hit on. Just do it with people. That you want to encourage them because it's right. It's right to encourage each other, right? Now, let me close, and I'm going long, but I got excited, but thank you for forgiving me. I want to turn the corner here at the end and say this. At the end of the day, what are we supposed to walk out of here with? A list of rules? That can feel really overwhelming. And that's not what I want you to end with. And interestingly, that's not where the poem ends. The poem ends actually where the whole book began. It's a beautiful symmetry to it. What's praiseworthy about this woman is this is a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. And that's what the book starts with. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And not beginning like it's the first thing and then you move on, beginning like the foundation. The foundation to being a wise person is not a set of principles, it's a person. The foundation of wisdom is not a sense of set of principles, it's a person. What you need at the end of the day here is not a list of rules, you need a Lord that you know and that you trust. That's what makes her great. Those who walk among the wise become wise. What's made her great is not that she had a list of rules she's checking off. It's that she had a Lord she fears. And the more she got to know God, she understands how the world works. And that's how she works well within it, because she knows him. And that's what the whole scriptures present to us. Not rules, but a king. Not a set of principles, but a person, a savior to love us. And if you look at the women in the New Testament, that's what changed them. Not principles, but a person. You saw the woman at the well. Is she industrious? Sure, she's out there at the well drawing water. And yet Jesus come to her, and yeah, she may have some good qualities, but nobody's perfect. None of us are. And he comes to her and she's working hard, but he says, hey, but I know your relationships have been devastated. You've been through multiple marriages. Now you're living with this guy. And it's interesting, Jesus doesn't give her a list of rules to follow after that. He says, if you knew me, if you knew who was talking to you, I would give you living water that would well up out of your heart into eternal life. He says, I'm not here to shame you because of bad decisions you made. I'm not here to shame you for not living up to a standard. I'm not here to give you a list of rules to try to be better, to earn the smile of God. I'm here to provide for you. I'm not trying to get water from you. I'm trying to give you the water your soul needs. And it's gonna change you. And if you drink from me, you become something new. I'm here to give you life. And what happens? As she puts her trust in Jesus, she goes back to her community. And what happens? She leads the whole community to Jesus. She becomes a hero of that community, the Hayil of that community. How? Not because she got it all figured out, but because she knew him. And so at the end of the day here, I hope you don't walk out feeling beat up by a list of rules. We all have places to improve, but the Bible's not a self-help book. The Bible is a presentation of a hero, the true hero, the one who disadvantaged himself for our advantage, the one who sacrificed himself so that we might live, the one who, while we did not love him, loved us unto death, the one who was thoughtful enough to provide for our salvation before you were even born. To be a hero, you come to trust the hero. You want to be heroic, you rest on the foundations of the true hero, right? That's our hope today, that you would know and love him. Let's pray together. Father, I want to thank you that your word presents us a beautiful standard. Who doesn't want to be married to a person like that, that we can know they're looking out for me? And who doesn't want to be a person like that? Down deep, we all know, I want to be a hero. I want to be someone that the community knows they can count on, and that the person I pledged my life to, I'll be faithful to them. We all want that, God. But all of us fall short, every one of us. And I just thank you that your scripture's not surprised by that. Your scripture anticipates that. It tells us that all of us like sheep have gone astray. Every one of us has gone their own way. There's not a perfect person in the house today or in the world today. And your solution is not a set of rules, it's a savior. What you're offering us today is not a list of to-dos, it's a Lord to know and to trust that can heal our wounds, that can satisfy our longings, that can forgive us, adopt us, and begin to speak to us like a good dad, to raise us up to be like him, that the more we look at you, the more we look like you, and the more the world benefits because we're in the wake of the true hero.
If you were encouraged by today's talk and believe it would be uplifting to others, then be sure to rate us and hit subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you stream your podcasts. To experience other talks, videos, and live gatherings, visit us online at PassionCityChurch.com or download the Passion Movement app. And again, thanks for listening to the Passion City Church podcast.